and welcome to the Groovy Uncle Podcast, presented by me, Glenn Prangnell. The Groovy Uncle Podcast takes a look at the creative output of a highly regarded, prolific bunch of musicians from the Medway Towns. So let's dive into a soup of groovy uncleness. Earlier this week, I caught up with Mole Lambert, ubiquitous drummer, bass player, singer, producer, and head honcho at State Records. Mole has played in many, many bands, past and present. The Jack Cades, Galileo 7, The High Estate, The Baron 4, Groovy Uncle, and many, many more. Yeah, good to see you. So how have you been in these strange, dark, terrifying, weird, troubling times?
Hanging on in there, basically. Surviving. Been lucky, I think, or fortunate. I don't know what the word is. In as much as my kind of personal situation hasn't really changed much, I didn't have to really adapt what I was doing in terms of a day-to-day existence or, you know, making a living or anything like that. That's largely remained the same in terms of, you know, selling stuff online and trying to make a living that way.
You know, like that feeling of the world sort of going a bit quiet for a while, do you think it's been helpful or has it just been scary?
A mixture of the two. It has been kind of scary. I think there was a point early on where it kind of felt like it was out there somewhere. It didn't really feel, you know, I did, you know, obviously early on, we didn't know anybody that had caught it. We didn't know anybody that had, you know, had any kind of complications as a result of that. And then I think a couple, you know, and then it's in your town, then your next door neighbor's got it. And it's like, oh, fuck, it's on your doorstep, basically.
Yeah, it's not just on the telly anymore.
No, exactly. Like, yeah. And that is genuinely frightening. I mean, early on, it was sort of bizarre, you know, maybe kind of take a wander up the road or something. And it's like a ghost town. It's like it's sort of like post-apocalypse almost. It certainly gave Lois more time to, you know, kind of maybe do a couple of things, even just like goofy things around the house that you wouldn't normally have the time or the inclination to do. It's like, well,
if you can't, think I can do that now. I wouldn't have thought about it before.
Go to work, let's paint the fence or some bullshit, which was exactly what we did. We painted our fence.
Rock and roll.
So, yeah, exactly. That was pretty cool. I was extremely grateful. I suppose in a curious way, I did benefit from it because obviously if people couldn't go out and they're bored and they want some sort of entertainment, it's like, well, you could switch on the TV or maybe you could like buy a record online. Well, that's where I come in. So yeah. I think I actually benefited from it early on because people were just, you know, going out of their minds with boredom and needed some sort of distraction, even if it's just for an hour or something. So thankfully that, you know, the selling stuff online didn't stop. And I think it actually increased a bit early on.
And the whole thing has turned people into all fluffy, lovely human beings now, isn't it? Not.
Or, you know, if there was some sort of goofy kind of utopian sort of vision for the future, it was so brief, so short-lived. And people soon came back to a version of reality with a bump.
Anyway, so music. Have you been making any music during lockdown?
Yes. Mostly remote recordings, I suppose. So I've done a few things with the Galileo 7 and with the Jack Cades, whereby I put some drums on tape, send them the files, and then they make the rest of it at home.
Yeah.
Done a few bits like that. Yeah, which were really good, actually, really good fun. Although it's obviously not an ideal way to work, but, well, there were, you know, there was no option to do it any other way. Very difficult to play to a click track. Really tough. In fact, I think I could say categorically, nobody plays metronomically.
No.
No one has perfect time, because there's always tiny fluctuations in the way that you play when, you know, you start kind of getting into it, or you do a goofy drum roll or something. You're always going to shift very, very slightly out of time.
And surely, even if you could, it wouldn't sound that great, would it?
No. Well, it's...
It wouldn't sound human.
No, that's the thing. I think you're effectively taking the human element out of it by trying to make it metronomical. The other couple of things that we did, which was better, because it was more like, you know, the sort of regular way of recording, did a couple of things for Kev Younger's Mr. Unswitchable.
They've been good. Enjoyed those.
So I got, you know, me and Lois got together and did some tracks, and that was probably more satisfying, just in terms of actually being able to play with another person, and also being able and having more control over the final result.
And I suppose it is also being able to do songs that maybe you'd previously thought, I'd like to do a version of that, but I've got no reason to do it. Whereas Mr. Unswitchable night, sort of, it's like giving you permission. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Basically.
You can do that song now. That's all right.
Yeah, but, I mean, each time that he announced another one and announced the theme, it's, you know, kind of immediately thinking, oh, well, okay, so what could we do that might be fun, that would fit into that theme? So I think probably in terms of almost like a, not exactly a like fantasy track, but I think doing The Who's I'm a Boy was particularly nice for me.
Yeah.
Because I did everything. I recorded, you know, I played everything. I, you know, recorded it, mixed it, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, they've been a long time favourite. As almost as long as I can remember. So, like you said, to finally have the reason to do a Who track was like, oh yeah.
And just to clarify for listeners who are thinking, what are they talking about? Mr. Unswitchables.
Mr. Unswitchables, a Medway chaparoo, an old mucker, Kevin Younger. My understanding is he was hosting an actual open mic night at a pub somewhere in.
That's right. Rochester, yeah.
Right. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
And then obviously when everything shut down and you couldn't go to a pub anymore, he decided to shift it to an online event, whereby he would suggest a theme each couple of months, however frequent they were. And you would submit a song and a video around that theme. Christ, man, some of the videos were like, I've said this to so many people, that because it wasn't, you know, you on a stage with an acoustic guitar ruining someone's song or whatever, you know, whatever these things often are, having that visual aspect really gave some people the opportunity to do something like really inventive and really creative. And obviously, if you've got access to recording equipment, you can make a proper song. I mean, I was quite pleased with the ones that we did, you know, from an egotistical point of view, and given our extremely limited understanding of using like video software and editing and things like that, I thought we came up with a couple of things that were pretty smart.
above, cause I'm a lonely man.
So, if we're talking about music you've been involved in, bands you've been involved in, recordings you've been involved in, if you could pick a few favourites, you know, what are your standout moments of things you've done?
In all honesty and in all seriousness, I would hold that session that we did in Sandgate doing Wet Weekend and You Look Good to Me. I don't know what it was. There's something about that which I can't really sort of put my finger on. Why?
Because that was actually recorded. That was recorded on cassette tape, wasn't it?
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's before we had the reel-to-reel machine.
And yet, it sounds the opposite of that.
I suppose what kind of blows me away about that is I don't really understand how we got it to sound like that, given the limitations of the technology, if you can call it that we were using. And I mean, those songs are fantastic. There's no question. And everything just seemed absolutely perfect to me anyway. And my kind of vague recollection is that they weren't, I don't even think that they were really done with any sense of purpose, were they? I can't really remember. It wasn't like they were, let's do a couple of songs for a single, or let's do a couple of songs. I mean, they ended up on an album. One of them ended up on a single, but I don't recall that being the plan.
Yeah, I think I'm right. It's that we'd more or less completed the first album, Play Something We Know, and I'd got to that thing where I thought, well, I've got quite a lot of other songs to maybe go and record another couple. Oh, these two are good. Maybe they'll squeeze on the album. But once we recorded Wet Weekend and You Look Good to Me, I think we thought, no, they don't fit on the album. They're too good. Or they just didn't fit.
No, even if there'd been physical space, that I don't think they would have fit.
No, I didn't. And so it was the intention to hold them back for something. And then the idea of a single came along.
That's right. There was wasn't there at least the proposal of doing something with Get Hip, I think.
That's right. There was going to be those two songs as a single. It didn't happen.
That's right.
But it didn't matter because Wet Weekend and You Look Good to Me ended up on the Persuaded album. And, of course, Wet Weekend was the B-side of Barefoot in the Car Park.
Yeah. So, okay, so you might remember this. So do those two songs predate anything that we did with Susie?
Yeah, they were recorded.
So they're like before Look Back and Laugh and Tripwire and
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because when Susie came down, the cassette tape was no more.
You're right. Yeah. We'd moved to the reel by that point. Yeah. No, that's, I've forgotten.
And, so that was right at the end. That was betwixt Play Something We Know and Girl From The Neck Down. It was like that little netherworld that a little bit of magic happened, ladies and gentlemen.
God, it really did, man. I mean, still, you know, when especially Wet Weekend, just the
drums sound great on that, don't they?
They do. And I, like I said, I don't really know why. I mean, I don't know what we did. I mean, I've got a feeling maybe we like kind of tuned them down a bit to get that sort of slightly sort of peppery sort of tom-tom vibe. But the kind of melancholy and desolation was...
What I loved about it was the fact that it captured that song. I was really worried when we first recorded it. That's the mood I wanted. I thought I was not going to, you know, when you've got a mood for a song, you've really got it in your head. Sometimes you don't know at all.
Sure.
And you think, just it is what it is. It'll come out. However it comes out, it'll be great. And other times, you think, no, I definitely want it to be like this, like you say, desolate, moody thing. Oh. That's the sort of song it is. And it more than captures it, the recording we did.
Melodica solo. Amazing. It really was.
I remember when I brought that down and you were just laughing. What the fuck? You got there?
Coming out of it. It was like, what's that? I mean, I knew what a melodica was. I was like, what's this extra bit? That's kind of.
What are you doing, Granddad?
But it sounded so smart. And whatever, you know, the little bits of guitar that Ben did, it just everything just worked so perfectly. I suppose partly why, you know, I have such strong regard for that now is that it was basically just me and you, wasn't it?
I mean Ben did the lead bits, yeah,
and Ben did some keyboard on You Look Good to Me.
That's right, yeah.
But it was basically just me and you, and I suppose that then there's,
yeah, because we did all the backing vocals together, didn't we? On all that, and those ba ba ba's on You Look Good to Me,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, that like sort of kind of fake Beach Boys thing in, and that was fucking wonderful as well. So there's, you know, I suppose there's that real sense of achievement that you've, you know, you've built this thing up, and that's, you know, that's your result. And like you say, the fact that it was on a fucking cassette tape, I actually think that stands up. You know, I still hold those songs up, and I genuinely think they're fantastic. I mean, those especially Wet Weekend, those would be two things that I could think of, you know, off the top of my head. I think, yeah, that really was good. That was just bloody wonderful.
Other tracks from other bands you've been in?
A lot of Embrook's stuff that was done in professional studios rather than on a poor studio. There's some pretty good stuff in there. The last album that we did, We Who Are, which was at the end of 2018, was the first thing that we'd recorded in the what was then the new studio. So we have our own 8-track studio in the back garden called North Down Sound, and that was the sessions that basically comprised that album were some of the first things that we'd done once that was built and once we'd got everything installed. And I hold that in pretty high regard generally, without necessarily picking out a particular track, but to pick out a particular track, the album that we did before then, Yellow Glass Perspectives, back in, I think it was 2004, was the last thing that we recorded at Tore. And there were a couple of songs that we did there with a little tiny string section. It was two girls basically like doubling up, like cello and violin, I think, if I remember rightly. And that one of those was pretty special. Show Me a Little Smile. Show Me a Little Smile by the Embrooks. That's a great song. I suppose the song itself is great. The playing is great. I think, you know, we really nailed, you know, like you were saying about a mood and a feeling. We nailed the mood and the feeling for that song. The string bits that the girls did were fantastic. So the Alessandro, our guitarist, helped them with a kind of arrangement. And that just came out sounding, yeah, just fucking magical. Where you kind of listen back and you're like, how did we do that?
It's so good. You should be able to remember what you did and how you did it, but you can't. it's like you think.
Yeah, because some of it is sort of
part of the magic, you know, if you can call it magic. I mean, I still don't. I mean, yeah, okay, I sort of understand the science of how you can capture sound on magnetic tape. Well, I'm saying that. No, actually, I don't. I don't understand that science at all. That's fucking magic. How do you do that? How do you get sound onto tape or onto any recording device? How do you capture vibrations in the air onto a recording medium? I don't really get that. And there are elements, I think, especially when you work with tape, there are elements that you don't really have so much control over and that you have to sort of surrender yourself to. And I think part of that is what comes into play in those things where you can't really say, oh yeah, the reason that's brilliant is this. And it's not, you know, sometimes it isn't as easy to put your finger on why that came out sounding so great. So I like that, you know, I like that sort of element of almost an element of chance.
Yeah.
And like I say, you have to sort of give yourself up to that. You can't really control it. So there's one higher state song that springs to mind, and this is purely from an ego maniacal point of view, because I basically did I construct the whole song by myself? No, not exactly. It was my song, a song called Precious Rings and Stones, B-side of a single, Song of the Autumn, which is a great A-side. Precious Rings and Stones was much more kind of me doing it, with a little less input from the other people in the band. That isn't why it ended up sounding really good. It just ended up, it was perfect. I think, like you're saying, for Wet Weekend earlier, it captured what I had in my head before we started, you know, before we pressed record. So I'm very pleased about that, because, you know, that was fully realized, I suppose would be the phrase. It absolutely got what I thought it was going to get. And that was a case of like sort of double tracking vocals, double tracking harmonies, and then kind of bouncing those down. And, you know, it's very like kind of, it's a kind of slow song with a lot of space. And I think sometimes those songs can be much more evocative of mood, because you're not like kind of thrashing away for 2 minutes. There's all this space to play with. So, you know, we probably used quite a lot of reverb and a bit of kind of tape echo to sort of get this feeling of this sort of aircraft hangery kind of space. And it just fucking worked, and it sounded wonderful.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty knocked out with that. That's, you know, that's something I would still hold up and say, yeah, that's a good piece of work.
Thinking is too much.
Okay, now we come to the part of the program where Vivian says,
let's go back to your childhood, 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 childhood.
What was the first musical memory?
It might be seeing a rerun of the Yellow Submarine film on TV.
I know they were rerunning that 76.
Right, so it might have been around that time. It couldn't have been earlier than mid-70s.
I was 13 in 1976, and we went down to Ilfracombe.
Okay.
And Radio 1 Roadshow with Noel Edmonds were there. When we were there.
Nice. Little Noel.
Noel Neatbeard. And, and I remember I wanted to stay back at the guest house we were staying. I wanted to watch the telly because I think that particular week, Yellow Submarine was on. They were running them each Wednesday night or something.
Okay.
For 3 or 4 weeks. But, yeah, so I reckon quite possibly that would have been 1976, so you would have been 5 years old?
Yeah, just about, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that would sort of make sense. That would sort of tie in, that sort of ties in with what I think is the period. Like, I can remember where I was living, and I think I understand the sort of chronology of that kind of early mid-70s time. So, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, before that, in terms of something that made an impact, it would have been the Doctor Who theme.
Mm.
Categorically, because I was a big Doctor Who fan. I just about remember the very, very start of the Tom Baker period, which for me is the best opening sequence. And I'll still, thankfully, you can find good quality versions of that on YouTube. And I still watch that just aghast, just like, I mean, okay, you know, you take that back 11 years when, you know, Delia Derbyshire and the Radiophonic Workshop created that, and the way that they created that out of, you know, fucking safety pins and bits of sticky paper.
She didn't originally get credited for composing it because Ron Grainer.
Yeah.
Ron Grainer whistled it or something, and then
that's right. I mean, I think it is his composition, but obviously he was nothing to do. Well, my understanding is he was nothing to do with the realization
of it.
Yeah. And the kind of bizarre soundscapes that she and the other people in that group created. So yeah, even the original 63 version is pretty out there, but by 74 they kind of embellished it slightly and added a couple of little bits, some little kind of sparkly bits, and it just, I don't know, it still takes me away. It takes me somewhere else. It's insane. I mean, it's really hard now, you know, 50 plus or almost 60 years down the line, to fully appreciate how groundbreaking and innovative, you know, some of those records and some of that music was and still is, even close to 60 years down the line. There's those kind of incredible leaps in like available technology in the kind of second half of the 20th century.
Mm.
Where before you know it, you know, kind of music and the approach to music is transformed beyond recognition.
Okay.
The first record that I remember buying that wasn't a kid's record is probably Mull of Kintyre by Wings.
Yeah.
So I'm not best pleased about, but it could be worse, I suppose.
It's all right. It could be a lot worse.
I mean, I don't particularly like that record now. I mean, I think I would have been, depending on exactly when that came out, I know it's 77, but depending on when it came out, I would have been about 6. The only other record that I remember buying in that period would have been, there was like a kind of a Star Wars soundtrack album that must have come out in 77 or early 78, somewhere around there.
This or that.
So I'm just going to give you a couple of words, two choices.
All right.
And you just got to come back with the answer.
Okay.
Pretty damn quick.
I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Light or shade?
Light.
gas or electric?
Gas.
Snickers or marathon?
Ugh, marathon.
Lark or owl?
Owl.
Morrissey or Morrison?
Which Morrison?
Just answer the question, okay. Please.
Oh, all right. All right, Morrison.
Magpie or Blue Peter?
Magpie. Jenny Hanley, come on.
Yeah, or Susan Stranks, come on.
Oh, my word, I'd forgotten about Susan Stranks. See, I remember Susan Stranks as Paper Chase. I think Her Time on Magpie, I think, is a little before my time.
Yeah, I sort of remember Paper Chase, but that was probably a bit too young. I was probably too old for that, wasn't it?
Probably too old.
Litlin.
You are quite old.
Yeah. A swim in the lake or a walk in the park?
Walk in the park.
Politics or religion? Politics or religion?
Oh, my God. God. Oh, that's really difficult. I can't fucking say it. Oh, religion. No, that's awful.
Mono. Mono or stereo?
Mono.
Top of the Pops or Old Grey Whistle Test?
Whistle Test.
Kerouac or Cracker Jack?
Cracker Jack.
A cheesecloth shirt or a pork pie hat?
Cheesecloth.
Well done. Okay, so we're going to finish on you telling me if there are any upcoming events, things we should know about, or any websites, or not dodgy ones, obviously.
There's a couple of things coming out, a couple of record releases that I think are sort of on the way. There's a Galileo 7 EP coming out on Spin Out Nuggets, I think, this year. It's all recorded and mastered and what have you. We had test pressings, which is basically re-recordings of stuff that we'd originally done down in Sandgate from their second album, Staring at the Sound. For whatever reason, the original finished product never really sat that well with, well, certainly with Alan. And an opportunity arose to re-record some of the stuff and maybe do it better. I think we took six tracks and have done them better, in my opinion. I think in everybody's opinion. Yeah, that should be out as a 12-inch EP, I think later this year. There's another band that Lois and Alessandro from the Embrooks are involved in called The Odd Men Out. We recorded an album's worth of material at our studio here, what seems like years ago now. I guess it must have been 2019. That seems, as far as I'm aware, that's on the edge of coming out through Dirty Water. Next month, Embrooks are recording some new stuff, hopefully for a single, if that all works out. One of the other bands you mentioned early on, Jack Cades. I've got a couple of Jack Cades gigs in November and December. I don't have any other gigs arranged with anybody at the moment. I think still approaching that with a degree of caution, for the reasons that we mentioned earlier. Still got to be a little bit careful about it. So I don't have any website now. So I'm just trying to sell stuff through, you know, the usual kind of other channels, through like kind of eBay, Discogs, Bandcamp. I started using recently.
Yeah.
And through Facebook. I'm trying to do a lot of private sale through Facebook, and that's actually pretty good.
All right.
It's a very, very good way of advertising things.
Mo Lambert, thank you very much. It's been real.
It's been a pleasure. An absolute pleasure.
Good to talk to you. Cheers, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nice one.
Thanks for listening to my podcast once again. I hope you enjoyed it. Why not join me next time when I'll be catching up with yet another interesting guest in It's What You Do.